Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Are you going to try to get Justin some reps with first-team skill players?
Yeah, I would...
Some of the
that could happen. I mean, that's, I would like to see that happen. Again, it just depends what happens on that first drive with Andy and some of those guys. And but I would say there's a good possibility that that could happen. Now, there might be a time where we put him in and it just so happens that a guy like Mooney isn't in there, but some of the others are, you know, but there might be one or two plays where Mooney is in. So it's just kind of it's a feel thing. This whole preseason is going to be a feel.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy. And now that I think about it, I wasn't there today, but upon hearing that from Matt Nagy to say that this whole year is going to be a feel thing, I actually like that because that means that they don't have something scripted necessarily, even though they kind of sound like they have something scripted because Andy Dalton has been the no doubt about it starter from the very beginning. Welcome back in on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Mark Grody. Yeah, that was Nagy talking about Justin Fields on his potential playing time and the circumstances in which he'll be playing, with whom he will be playing in that game on Saturday night against Saturday afternoon out at Soldier Field, a noon game on Saturday, 11 o'clock pregame, which I will be a part over on our sister station, WBBM. Let us go now to The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book from the Chicago Sun-Times. He covers the Bears just like I do. He is Mark Potash. He was out in Lake Forest today. How are you, Marco?
Great, Mark. How you doing?
I am doing well. Let's start with that, what I was just talking about with the Bears head coach Matt Nagy saying that this whole year is going to be a feel thing. Do you believe that?
Yeah, absolutely I do. I think it's going to be kind of one of the key issues, and it always has been ever since they set this up, is just how open-minded Matt Nagy will be to, even though he is set on Andy Dalton being the number one quarterback at the beginning of the season, just how open-minded he is to the fact that to the possibility that Justin Fields, you know, might be ready sooner than he thinks, and I think he will be open-minded about that. The field thing, I think, is important. That's kind of why the preseason is still interesting, even though it's not going to change the week one starter. In that, if Justin Fields, and I don't think it's going to happen Saturday, but if Justin Fields looks like the kind of guy, you know, if he shows that he's the kind of guy who really, besides being ready, but just invigorates a team and invigorates an offense, that's Matt Nagy's job to see that, to notice that, and to know. Just like when Russell Wilson outplayed Matt Flynn in Seattle in 2012, you got to have that intuition that, hey, what the reality is. And I think the feel thing allows for that to eventually play into it as the season goes along. So I think that makes the preseason even more interesting, even though we know what the outcome will be as far as week one.
All right, today, and I know there's like 1,000 things going on when there's a dual practice, as there has been the last couple days with the Bears and the Dolphins, but from what you saw watching Justin Fields today, how did he look today in practice?
Well, he looked better today than he did yesterday, but I still think defenses overall, still had the better of it, I guess. But the one thing that Fields did that caught everybody's attention, for one thing, it was right in front of the media stands, was his performance in the red zone drill at the end of practice, where I think I counted they scored 6 touchdowns out of 7 or 8. I can't remember. I mean, sometimes they ran in or whatever, but either way, he was outstanding. I mean, it was against a second team defense, so that's another thing you have to keep in mind for tomorrow or for Saturday. Also, is who he's going against, and so it was kind of just that surge of excitement that you kind of saw what he could be at his best, because you know he's rolling out, he's finding receivers, he's putting the ball exactly where he needs to, and guys were making plays. And so it was a great tease. I guess that's the best way to put it, because you can't make any judgments from that. But it was still interesting to see. It at least gave you a little bit of a glimpse. That's what it did. It gave you a glimpse of what could happen if they you know, get it together and give this kid a chance to do something. So that was exciting for, I know, for a lot of fans. But again, can't make too many judgments on that, because especially coming into a game where, you know, the offense is really kind of anticipating a question here, I guess. So the offense is really not ready to make Justin Fields look great Saturday. It's just not. I mean, he's not, as I said, I've said before, he's not a miracle worker, and he's not going to, I don't think he's going to be able to put this offense on his shoulders. And I just don't think with this offensive line that they're ready to be, you know, to really even look impressive. So I would set the bar low if you're going into that game, you know, thinking that he's going to, you know, or anticipating Justin Fields doing something special.
Well, and Matt Nagy even acknowledged that a lot of what he will allow Justin Fields to do on Saturday is going to depend on the sturdiness of the offensive line with which he is working and what the Miami Dolphins are doing on defense. He doesn't want to get his quarterback, you know, hurt. That is, Bears fans should be very heartened to hear something like that. That said, don't you think, Potsy, that even the play calling is going to be incredibly conservative when Fields is out there, like handing the ball off and throwing screen passes?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting just to see how efficient they can be, how much they can avoid looking bad. I mean, I feel like I've seen so many of these preseason games where the Bears offense just looks discombobulated and the quarterbacks look overwhelmed and it just doesn't look like they're getting anywhere. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Matt Nagy and Bill Lazor, I guess, approach it as far as just calling a nice, safe game that allows the kid to make plays and just take one step at a time, and instead of making splash plays and things that get people all excited. And so the bar for me is set very low. I think if they just look competent, I think that's a step in the right direction, because they have no matter what happens Saturday, they have a much bigger job ahead of them in getting their offensive line set. They have a long way to go with that, and I think that's going to be really important.
That's the voice of Mark Potash, covers the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times. I'm Mark Rohde here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mark, I saw that Drew Rosenhaus was out in Lake Forest today at the practice. He happens to represent Akeem Hicks, and I saw a tweet from Adam Schefter that Drew Rosenhaus apparently reportedly approached the Bears about a possible extension for the 31-year-old Akeem Hicks. Do you think that he will get an extension with the Bears?
I don't think so, unless it's at the Bears' price, which with Drew Rosenhaus usually isn't. So, yeah, I think they would love to get it. I mean, Akeem Hicks is 31. He's coming off an okay year by his standards, not great. He's certainly not at a peak, but, I mean, the defense was not in great shape last year. So, this is not like – I don't think he's operating from a position of strength. As good as Akeem Hicks is at this stage, at his age – I'm just not sure how convinced the Bears are that he is a long-term, at this point, longer-term answer. This is kind of I wouldn't say prove it year, but he still has to show that, you know, he's going to have some staying power as he gets to 31, 32, 33, and he's going to have to earn it. So I would be very surprised, unless, again, if it was at the Bears' price, I would be very surprised if they got something done.
Well, and then you have to think about, too, the Bears' defensive priority right now is probably, the reality of the NFL, is the younger guy, and that would be Roquan Smith, who's
absolutely.
Right? I mean, he's seeing his colleagues from other teams get big money deals. He's going to get paid, isn't he, Mark?
He will, and that's one of those deals that probably should be done sooner rather than later at the rate that things are going. So because they're tight, they're going to be tight no matter what. And so, yeah, so obviously that should be a priority. And they, in the past, they've done that. But the last year or so, they have not because they've had so many issues, salary cap issues. So. But I still expect that something to get done there. I don't know when, but I guess, so like I said, sooner rather than later, because I got a feeling the price is only going to be going up.
All right, now the really important stuff, Mark. Khalil Mack versus Adam Shaheen today. It was all the rage for a while. What did you see, and who won the fight?
Well, I was watching the Bears' offense at the time, so I didn't. I saw it as everyone reacted to it. So I have to admit, did not see it.
I gotcha.
So I don't know what happened. These fights are not. They're not, you know, knockdown, drag out affairs. They're not really that. They're not that big a deal. There was one with Cole Kmet where he just shoved a guy again today, and that started something. And it was not much. It was nothing that ruined the spirit of, hey, let's not, you know, embarrass our coach type of thing. So I'll be honest, I really don't know exactly what happened. Let's put it this way, Mark, if it got to a stage where it would be a big deal, I got to feel like Shaheen would not have come out on the better end of that altercation. Khalil Mack is not somebody you want to tangle with.
You know, it's funny that you said you didn't see it, because I found the experience of, and this is the second time that I've covered dual practices. I assume that you were you in Denver in 2018?
No, I was not. I had not covered a practice since the Bears practice against Mike Ditka's Saints in La Crosse in 1998.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a while for me, but yeah. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're going to say,
yeah.
I think, is that it's sensory overload.
Yes.
in the fact that we're used to watching one thing at a time, and you've got like I think even it was yesterday, I guess it was like first-team defense versus first-team offense on both sides, and you don't know where to look. It's very,
exactly.
For me, I can't. It's very difficult. But it is good to see them against a different another team. I think that's better than practice. And we are at that point. We're at what I consider the worst point of training camp, where they've had the maximum amount of practices without any games, anything to tell you, to give you some kind of barometer, of how they're doing. So I'm glad we're at this point, and then and looking forward to Saturday, so we have something to write about that actually happened.
Absolutely, man. We're all hungry for it. In the meantime, there is the continued drama or injury to Tevin Jenkins in his back. I don't know if you guys got any new information today, but I guess that's my question. Why don't we know what's going on with Tevin Jenkins?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. I think that is kind of a red flag in itself. I said this, wrote this earlier in the week about Jenkins, and that on the one hand, you don't want them giving you, like, you know, which we've had before, where they'll say, oh, everything's positive, and they'll give you these optimistic reports, and it turns out they're not, you know, that it's not true. But on the other hand, we've never even got any detail on the injury itself. We've never given no real updates, except I guess last week he said Matt said he was optimistic, but not much more than that, just hopeful. So what I'm saying is, because we're not getting much information, I think, you fear the worst. I think that's fair, frankly, to think that this might be more serious or more long-term than they originally thought, because they did not put him on the PUP list and to start camp, which means they were, optimistic. But there was one thing today, I kind of noted this, and I thought it was interesting, is that when Matt Nagy was asked, about why he believes the offensive line issues will kind of be resolved and why he's not really that concerned about him, he gave a very long minute and a half answer, and all the, this guy, everyone coming back, did not even mention Jenkins. Mm. And if Jenkins were really that close, he's in effect a first round draft pick. I mean, he's a second rounder, but they traded up and they consider him a first round prospect. He definitely would have been, he would have been one of the guys you're clinging to. Hey, we've got this, we got Tevin Jenkins coming back. That's going to help. He never even mentioned him. And to me, that's just a sign that of just how far away he is or how much they just don't know. So, So to answer the question, I think it could be a while. I'm not. I don't think he's even in the mix, so to speak, at this point at left tackle.
And all along, or not all along, just recently, Matt Nagy has really been talking up Larry Borum, And I don't know if that's his way of just setting up competition on the team. Like, hey, your spot's not safe, man. We got this Borum guy who actually is a fifth-round pick, but we had second and third-round grades on him. Do you think that he's really opened their eyes, or is he just, like, throwing out – are they just using him as competition to
– No, I think he did. And in fairness, he did not mention Larry Borum in his answer today either.
Okay.
But Larry Borum's a fifth-round draft pick. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a different deal. But Larry Borum was good for one practice. They acknowledge that they were not trying to sell us a bill of goods on him. Juan Castillo said it. Matt said it. That Larry Borum was above and beyond their expectations for one practice, and that was going to earn him more time. That was going to earn him a shot at the job. And then he got hurt. So now he's out, but I mean, I think they expect him to be back. But he's a contender, but he's still a rookie. So it's Elijah Wilkinson's job right now to lose, I guess, at this point. So you know, good luck. You know, good luck with that. It's, you know, not that he's not a good player, but that's not what they were hoping for when they let Charles Leno go.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Right. I mean, that was to some degree, a gutsy move. I mean, they're you know, people can say what they want about Charles Leno, but he was a sturdy, healthy left tackle for a lot of years, and they clearly focused on his replacement right in the draft.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at it this way, I mean, the Bears' offensive line was going to be a question mark, even if Charles Leno and Bobby Massey were starting today. And when on draft day, when they brought in Tevin Jenkins, it was going to be a question mark it looked like they were going to have Charles Leno and Tevin Jenkins as their tackles. And then when they let Leno go, then it's Jermaine Ifedi and Tevin Jenkins as their tackles. Now they don't even have them. Now they're down even below that. So my point is, this was going to be a question mark even at full strength, even at their best. The offensive line play was going to be a question mark. So just think how much more tenuous it is now. With this issue, they have a lot of work to do there, and that's one reason why, you know, these first few snaps that you see on Saturday are going to be interesting, just to see where they are.
Yeah, I can't wait, and it's,
if you can't block, you can't run, and if you can't run, any quarterback behind there is going to be in trouble, no matter who it is.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's just very simple football, and that's been their big issue. I guess what I'm saying is, despite all the focus on the quarterbacks, I think the biggest thing they've had to do is solidify this offensive line, and it's just – I'm not saying it's a mess, but I'm just saying it's just in flux at this point. And that's a tough thing. That's a tough thing, because they always talk about continuity, and they've had none of that. So to me, I think it's a huge issue.
Well, and I think that to some degree, because of the offensive line, even since 2018 when Matt Nagy got here, part of the reason he's never been able to fully run his offense is, of course, not the right quarterback, but also offensive line. And last year, for half the season, it was awful. And then they reconfigured, but the play calling became more conservative under Bill Lazor, and they were doing things that maybe they should. So it's my long-winded way of asking, like, is this going to be yet another year where we're not going to see the full Matt Nagy offense, or – or we're going to see it and it's not going to work because of the offensive line and what other issues they might have?
Well, yeah, I guess that's a possibility at this point, because their tackle situation is unsettled. You know, they seem, you know, once James Daniels gets back, and I'm assuming he will come back fairly soon, they're pretty solid in the middle. That's got the make. They've got the makings of a pretty good offensive line with, you know, Whitehair and Mustafa and Daniels. But they need to get the tackle things situation settled. So you're right. Yeah, that could be an issue, you know, all the way through. And it goes back to, you know, do you want to risk having a rookie quarterback back there, you know, and who getting his brains beat in? And what, you know, what's the risk reward factor there? So that's why I say I think my focus is really going to be on the offensive line and just the operation of the offense, just to see if they can operate at just a base level, regardless of the quarterback, because you got to start there. That's how rudimentary this offensive renaissance is for the Bears. It just starts the simplest thing, blocking.
Yeah. Yep. Block the man in front of you, Mark. Do you like baseball being played in the cornfield?
I think it's kind of interesting. You know, we've been to Field of Dreams. We used to, when the Bears played at practiced at Platteville, we took a trip there once to Dyersville because it was fairly close. So we've been there, and it's kind of it's a neat thing. So I guess it's not the field that the movie was played on. But I just watching it,
it looks
kind of neat. It's obviously a novelty and stuff like that. But I think it's an interesting, I don't want to say concept because I don't think it's anything that's going to be every year more than once a year.
Calling it an event. How about that word?
Yeah, event. It's an event. Yeah, yes. Right. No, it's a nice event. Yeah, it's a nice event. The best thing is the White Sox are in a pennant race.
Yeah, they're winning.
I don't know how interested I'd be if they weren't, to tell you the truth. So then it's a fine line on a novelty, so how interested you are. I can't say I'd be watching it if the White Sox weren't in a pennant race.
You'd watch it for just to see what it looked like and then turn it off. That's probably what
I would
do.
Yeah, for the novelty factor, but I'd probably get bored pretty quickly. But I do like it. I like Field of Dreams, like the movie, and the whole idea of that is kind of neat. I was definitely for that.
Is baseball, from a fan standpoint, is that your favorite sport? I'm guessing it is.
I can't say that I have a favorite sport. Okay. I think somebody asked me before. I can't remember. I got all confused because I couldn't figure it out. But, when you're a kid, I guess it is. Especially when I was a kid, basketball, the Bulls were just starting. So it was basketball wasn't a big deal. And when I was a kid, football was exclusively a weekend sport. There was not even Monday night football. And so I worked on the weekends because my family's in the grocery business. So I always had a job. I never really became a big football fan until later, until I was in high school and stuff. So I'd say baseball because you just grow up in Chicago. I'm a Southsider who likes the Cubs and Sox because I would go to games at Comiskey Park, but would see the Cubs on television when I got home. So I would say, in a roundabout way, I'd have to say, baseball. But I think just because I think it starts so young, you learn it, so you fall in love with it so early, I guess.
Yeah. No, same with me. I'm a little bit younger, but I'm not young. But baseball was definitely my number one. I think football has passed it up for me, but baseball's still a close number two. I mean, those of us, anybody over 40 probably says that, but... And we hope that the kids, the youngsters, start to get more into baseball. If they just keep these 7-inning doubleheaders and the man on second, Mark, I think the interest will stay high for the kids.
Well, for the kids, but not for me. So if that ever happens, my favorite sport will be like gambling. But it won't be baseball because I think those are two really bad developments for the sport.
You and Grobber, man. You and Grobber. You guys got to commiserate,
So, and a few other people, I think.
There are.
Yeah. But, I won't. It's a good point because they do have to keep interest with a younger generation. And I think they're doing it. And so... that's one way. But that second base thing, that's got to go. That's not baseball. Sorry. Not baseball.
No, you actually – okay, I full transparency, I love the man on second rule. I love the 7-innings rule. But we were walking back from fields 3 and 4 yesterday, you and I, and we were kind of debating this. You made it – you kind of got points on me when you said – well, that's just the broadcaster in you talking because you just want the game to be over quickly so you don't have to sit around and watch it. That means you're not really a super baseball fan. And you're right, man. Most broadcasters love the 7-inning rule just because of the fact that it'll be over quickly and then we can go to bed earlier.
They do, and the fans like a lot of people like the second base rule because it's just automatic. It's automatic excitement.
Yes.
It starts a rally. And I grew up with baseball when you didn't need that. It was just,
It was different.
The strategy or whatever of the game or just the pace of the game was good enough. But times change, generations change. And one year, I always say, one time this generation is going to be the older one with a younger generation nipping at their heels about some change in the game in 50 years. So, what goes around comes around. So.
Yep, amen, man. Mark, I will see you out at Soldier Field it's a noon game. I'll see you out there Saturday. I keep wanting to say Saturday. I'll see you a Saturday afternoon.
Sounds good, Mark.
All right, brother. That is Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times. Yes, our attention spans have been manipulated and just crushed. I was like that when I was a kid growing up, man. I needed every part of base. I needed the pregame show, every inning, the commercials, the postgame show. I was we used the word satiate earlier. I was insatiable, like, when it came to baseball. I wanted every second of it. And that's changed. Like, now I'm all for not what was today's Cubs game? 4 hours? Jesus. I'm all for not hanging around for 15 innings of baseball and having seven inning games and all. I still love baseball, but like I said, my attention span has been compromised through the years, just like everybody else's, because of social media and things like that. Do we need to take a break here, Fry Guy? Brandon Fryer, our producer. All right, we'll take a break. I'm thinking in my head what I want to do next. You know what we're going to do next is I want to talk more about the Bears, and I will play for you Adam Shaheen and his reaction to his scuffle. Is that the right word? His scuffle with Khalil Mack today. So Adam Shaheen, you'll hear several questions asked to Adam Shaheen next. I'm Mark Grody at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We went through it last year, and that's part of the reason too, is like we went through – you know, musical chairs for a little while there at the offensive line. And it was hard, whether it was injuries or whether we just wanted somebody to play better. And then we ended up getting to a point where we found those five guys. And right now, you know, with Ifedi being out and Leno, you know, not being here anymore, two of those guys aren't out there right now. But you still have Alex, you still have Cody, and you still have Sam. So we just know that this is giving guys a chance. And we believe in Juan, we believe in them. And then schematically, we got to help them out where need be. You know, so I really believe that, is it a concern and is it or not a concern, is it a focus for us to know that we got to be better there and just keep trying to find that starter at left tackle? Yeah. But at the same time, when Ifedi's back out there and James Daniels is back out there and Cody's out there and Sam Musfer's out there and we get that tackle fixed, that's my calm.
I mean, the interior of the Bears offensive line, assuming that James Daniels does return, and I do think he will, like, the interior looks really good, man, with Cody Whitehair and James Daniels and Sam Mustipher looks more in command now than he did last year. And that was Bears head coach Matt Nagy talking about the offensive line. I'm Mark Grody, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. About 25 minutes from right now, we are going to go to the Field of Dreams game in, what is it, Dyersville, Iowa? Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yep, Dyersville.
Dyersville. Yep, Dyersville, Iowa, the Field of Dreams game where the Score's very own Chris Ranji is there. So I don't know why I laugh when I say his name, because I just don't think of him as like being like a romantic person in love with the game and you know, having that feeling of being in the cornfield. Well, he did say he's going to leave early because the traffic was a bitch getting in. So we'll hear from Ranji in his car driving away from the cornfield where the White Sox are leading right now, 7-4. And so we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about the experience, everything with Chris Ranji coming up at 9 o'clock. This game Saturday, man, like, it's a big game. I hate to say that about a preseason game, but I think it's one of the more interesting preseason games to anticipate in a long time, because you've got this quarterback, you've got this Justin Fields, and it sure looks like, according to what Matt Nagy is saying, they're going to give him a decent chunk of time. Andy Dalton's going to get maybe two series. Who knows? Maybe one. I mean, we've seen Matt Nagy pull the carpet out from under us when it comes to preseason games in the past. So whatever. But the second string quarterback is Justin Fields. And Matt Nagy even indicated today that he might play him into the third quarter before they bring in Nick Foles to close things out. So it's big, man. Like, in terms of, if you believe in, we'll know it when we see it, which I think is Matt Nagy's signature statement as it pertains to Justin Fields and when we will see him. We'll know it when we see it. I think it's probably pretty hard to see in training camp. But the real evaluating of Justin Fields, we'll know it when we see it, is going to happen in these preseason games. There are three of them, and the first one is on Saturday. The only chance that Justin Fields would have to start in the September 12th game against the Rams in that primetime game is if Matt Nagy sees it and knows it in one of these preseason games. So this is where, you know, you get all of our reports and our tweets and my Bears hits here on the Score, but it's all tempered by the fact that this is going on Bears against Bears, unless the Dolphins are around like they were the last couple days. It is hard to truly know what is real, and we can tell you exactly what we see out there with the good and the bad. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but when it's a preseason game, there is more meaning to it. Not complete meaning, but there's a lot more, and that's where this is where the real evaluating is going to go on. And if Justin Fields becomes undeniable, it's going to be in these preseason games and maybe this game on Saturday. So it is going to be – this is one of those preseason games, one of those preseasons. I don't even think I need to sell it to anybody. I'm not trying to do that at all, believe me. I think it sells itself, and I think there'll be more interest. Like, it's going to be a Bears Sunday here on the Score and a Bears Monday after what happens on Saturday, unless Justin Fields throws one pass and then he gets him out of there, and then we got nothing. It's Nick Foles from the third series on, because they just don't want to mess with the volatile offensive line. But I don't know that those words have ever come out of my mouth, that this is a huge preseason game, but it is. It really is. There was the scuffle in practice today. I was not there, just so I could be here for you guys. Between Adam Shaheen, the former Bears tight end, a former second-round pick, now playing with the Miami Dolphins and doing fine with them. And there was a little bit of a shoving match with Khalil Mack today. And I happened to attain the audio of Adam Shaheen being questioned by the Miami reporters. Here you go.
Adam, was it good to renew acquaintances with the Bears and team you got particularly reacquainted with Khalil Mack early on in that one-on-one drill? Can you just describe the atmosphere of the practice and how it got a little bit sticky there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good competitive day. You know, I think you're going to have that. That's why we do the joint practices. So, you know, they got us, we got them, and it was just a good practice, I thought, all around. So.
Can you share anything that Khalil was telling you after you guys broke up and he seemed to be still yapping quite a bit?
I mean, that's just guys talking, and I mean, it's going to happen. That it wasn't just me, it wasn't just him. It was back and forth. It's going to happen now, it's going to happen in the game, so it was nothing crazy.
You keep making a lot of catches in practice. How excited are you about the prospects for what your role could be in the offense this season?
Yeah, I mean, still got a lot of work to do as far as, you know, there's a lot of nuances to put in a lot of stuff. So really learning and grinding down on this. But that's what we're here for in training camp to do, is to keep preparing and learning this stuff. So that when it comes game one, we're ready to roll.
Adam, after you caught a touchdown, it looked like you considered dunking the ball on the post, but then changed your mind. Why not dunk?
Well, I don't know if there was a little downslide or something, but my feet got tangled up, and I thought, you know what, I might as well just run this one back.
It looked pretty bad if you actually tried to dunk it and couldn't get to the rim.
Exactly. That's why I didn't even jump. Didn't want to even jump.
Okay. All right.
There was a little pocket on the earth. That's all it was.
Leave that to Mac Collins.
Yeah, we'll leave that to Mac. That's his thing.
And what's it been like since Gesicki came back to the tight end group?
It's good. I mean, we love Mike, personality-wise, and then also what he brings to the game. So it's been awesome having him back.
Last year, you were traded the week training camp began, didn't have any preseason. What's it like to have a full year in a similar offense, not exactly the same, and now to build on that?
I think it's huge. Also being with, you know, kind of that group for the whole year last year, and then starting off right now, I think it's, you know, building those relationships and that trust is just something that you can't do that when you get traded, you know, and you're playing right next to the guy for the first time last year. But I think it's been good for me and hopefully good for everybody else as well.
Adam, last question.
Adam, last year you and Mike and Durham caught a lot of balls and caught a lot of touchdowns. And that was interesting because they said that the Gailey offense didn't suit tight ends, and it did. I'm curious, what do you think about the Godsey Stoopsville offense and how it fits tight ends?
You know, I think, like I mentioned last time, I think right now as we're earning those reps and earning those, you know, targets and stuff, like earning those opportunities, I think if we keep showing and keep doing what we've been doing, there's no reason that we can't be even better than we were last year, which was, I think, one of the top five tight end groups in the league as far as production goes. So I think and we have influx of, you know, some new guys as well that are, you know, awesome as well. So who knows? But the sky's the limit for our group.
Thanks, Adam.
I am positive that was way more Adam Shaheen than you guys needed. So that's operator error on my part, that I sent that audio to Brandon Fryer today. I should have just left the Mac stuff in. I don't know how interested you guys were in knowing how he's doing with the Miami Dolphins, but there it was. There it was, Adam Shaheen. And you heard his comments on Khalil Mack, and he just kind of made light of it. Nope, no big deal. And they typically aren't a big deal. It is interesting. It always is when players get into scuffles, and then you've got, 100 guys on the field basically, you know, trying to break each other up. You know, you don't want football fights to get ugly. They typically do not, except for a couple of exceptions, you know, like Kyle Long flinging a helmet at a guy. He threw a helmet. You may want to lay low for a while, man. You threw a helmet at a guy. So that was Adam Shaheen. When we return, I actually want to talk about the Chicago Bulls and something that is going on with the Bulls that I don't remember ever going on with the Chicago Bulls, ever. Coming up next, Mark Grody, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. What's up, Mark Grody with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Here with you until 10 o'clock. Chris Ranji from Dyersville, Iowa, in the Field of Dreams game coming up in 10 minutes, 9 o'clock. Right now, I want to talk about the Chicago Bulls, and they've made some dramatic changes to their team. They have become very watchable, have the Chicago Bulls. I think, on paper, DeMar DeRozan and Lonzo Ball and Nikola Vucevic and Zach LaVine and Patrick Williams and Kobe White and Lauri Markkanen and all these guys, that Ayodele Sumu. Like, the Bulls are fascinating and intriguing, and it looks great, and I already can't wait for the Bulls season. The other day, I was talking to Mark Schanowski, who co-hosts the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King. He works for ABC7. He's going to be working in the Bulls, calling the Bulls developmental games. And he said something to me that I thought was very interesting. Listen to Mark Schanowski right here on the Bulls.
Well, I think that was his mission from day one. You know, Michael Reinsdorf was very loyal to John Paxson and Gar Foreman, and those guys did some good things during their run here, particularly in the draft. But I think that, you know, when we saw what happened at the All-Star game, when fans, you know, were chanting to fire Gar Paxson, and I think that really struck a tone with ownership that they had to really change the way they approached everything with the organization. And when Michael made the decision, Michael Reinsdorf, that is, to go out and hire Arturas, his marching orders were, listen, I don't care what it costs. I don't care who you want to bring in. We've got to change this thing because we used to be a worldwide brand, and now people are kind of laughing at us, and we don't have the respect that we should have as a big market organization. So I think from day one, he was told, bring in the coach you want, go get the players you want. We're not going to worry about the payroll as much as trying to get a winning team back here in Chicago. And I think that we've seen his vision from the very start. You know, he took it slow at first. Last year in free agency, the only guy they brought in was Garrett Temple. I think he wanted to take a half a season to evaluate the roster. And we saw at the trade deadline, he moved very aggressively to turn over, you know, one-third of the roster, and he basically finished that job this offseason. I mean, after they get rid of Lauri Markkanen, the only players left from when he started are going to be Zach LaVine and Kobe White, and that's an amazing turnaround in just over a year.
This is the first time I can ever remember in either being a Bulls fan or being one who has covered the Chicago Bulls, where there is pressure from ownership to win. Like, there has always been from Jerry Reinsdorf is, for the most part, a lot of loyalty. And I think that John Paxson is subject number one when we talk about that loyalty. Like, the Bulls won on John Paxson's watch. They did some good things. There's no doubt. They restored order from the horribleness that was the end of the Jerry Krause era and the Bill Cartwright head coaching era. Like, he restored order, did get the team to the Eastern Conference Finals, but it never felt like there was this win or else edict from ownership or the top. Like, it never felt that way. I think that the win or nothing edict in the 90s came from the players more than anything, and maybe Phil Jackson. Even then, you never really heard anybody pounding the tables and saying, do what you got to do, bring in everybody, go crazy spending. This is the first time, and it's Michael Reinsdorf, as Mark Schanowski points out, that he's saying, you know what? We're not comfortable with what has gone on with this franchise recently. We're going to need you to build a winner for us. Here's the money. Go out. Yep. 3 years, $85 million for DeMar DeRozan. Yep. Lonzo Ball, 4 years, $85 million, though. Sure. Oh, you want to trade for Nikola Vucevic? Sure. Do it. And so I like it. I like it that for the first time that I can ever remember, that even in winning years, like, there is kind of this, like, Arturas, we want you to, like, it is odd, too, that Arturas Karnišov, I thought for sure he was going to take a lot more time to evaluate and maybe kind of nickel and dime and really build the team in a specific image. The image that he's building it in is veteran players. Like, this is what he is stocking this team with a 31 or 2-year-old DeMar DeRozan. Nikola Vucevic is 30. Obviously Lonzo Ball is 23. Zach LaVine still in his 20s. And then, Kobe White and Lauri Markkanen, if you're counting them as well. But you got, like, the window is now for these Bulls. And it's fascinating and interesting that there's pressure from the top for once. And you have to look at how the Bulls might compete in the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks are better than the Chicago Bulls still. Brooklyn is probably still better than the Chicago Bulls. Philadelphia, probably, yeah. It gets interesting when we talk about the Knicks, Atlanta, and Miami. That's where the Bulls could fit in. So the top three teams, in whichever order you would like, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, and Philadelphia. But then the Knicks, 10 games over last year. Atlanta, 10 games over last year. Miami, 40-32 last year. That's right where the Bulls fit in. It's not inconceivable that the Bulls could be the fourth best team in the conference next year. I think most people probably still put, like, Miami ahead of the Bulls, but I don't know about the Knicks and Atlanta. I mean, are they coming back for more next year? We'll see. And maybe one of those big three will drop out too. Who knows? In other words, there is expectation on the Chicago Bulls in this upcoming season, and I like it. I like it a lot. Like, there's a real place for the Bulls in the Eastern Conference next year. And the window, this is, like, with this group, it's not a long window. 3 years maybe, right? Like, where you have Vucevic playing like an all-star or is an all-star. DeMar DeRozan, what, 3 years, right? Because he'll be 35 in 3 years. And who knows? Maybe Lonzo Ball becomes a superstar and he develops. And maybe Patrick Williams, who, by the way, had 18 points and 10 rebounds, if you care about summer league games. Timberwolves 78, Bulls 59. I guess Io DeSumo did not have a good shooting game. But he's another one that makes this team interesting. I don't think he's going to, considering the players that the Bulls have signed, I don't see Io DeSumo, like, seeing a lot of court time. Probably not even with the real Bulls to start the season, but, I'm rooting for them.
This is the thing, too, Grody. Like, yeah. The team is now relevant. They used to be the laughingstock. That was the main thing. Like, no free agents would want to come there. Now you're making these moves. Granted, they're not, you can't beat Brooklyn and probably the Bucks or something like that, but it makes you relevant where other stars are looking and, like, I like what they're doing over there.
Yeah, and it's, because it made me think, too, of when they signed that year that they signed Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo to play with Jimmy Butler. That was different, though, because you definitely had Dwayne Wade in heavy decline at that point. Like the theme was with him is he can't hit a three when he came in there. He was not the same superstar, and it clearly didn't work out. Jimmy Butler was still Jimmy Butler, and Rajon Rondo, you know, he was okay with the Bulls. Actually, he was pretty good with the Bulls.
Yeah, he was good, but yeah. I remember that, too. That's when Gar, season before, was like, hey, we're going to get younger and more athletic. And yeah. He was like, oh, yeah, let's sign Dwayne Wade and Rondo. There you go.
Right, so that was an entertainment grab. That was a people know these guys. Maybe people come to – we could fill it up. So that was a blatant attempt. This, though, is – Arturas, we want to win, so go get us players that can help us win and compete in the Eastern Conference. And I don't remember the last time I remember that edict, if you want to call it that, coming from ownership of the Chicago Bulls, and I think it's a really good thing. Have you made contact with Chris Ronji? Is he okay? We've made contact with Chris Ronji. He has been in Iowa at the Field of Dreams game, in which the White Sox right now are leading 7-4 in the bottom of the seventh inning. We've seen some big home runs from the White Sox tonight, including Eloy Jimenez, a three-run homer, Jose Abreu, who's gone yard. We'll get more details from Chris Ronji, and he'll tell us about the entire experience when we return. I'm Mark Grody. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.